So one of the things I was astonished about while reading the book is how little we know about giant waves, and how only recently have scientists even started to paint sort of a partial picture of what these big rogue waves are like. Were you surprised too to learn that this is such an emerging field of study?
Well, yes, and in fact, that was part of the motivation behind writing the book, because I read an article in the New York Times, I think it was maybe 5 or 6 years ago, outlining the sort of facts of how often these freighters are disappearing. And at the time, there was a scientist in Europe quoted as saying 2 major ships a week are just going missing, just poof, like gone. And I remember looking at that and thinking, how can this possibly be true? I mean, how can this? It wasn't like the New York Times said, "How can this possibly be true?" They were just reporting it, and but I wanted to know more about what do you mean these 800-foot ships are disappearing with all hands on them? Like, how can this? How come we're not reading about it? Why is it happening? How, in this sort of high-tech world we live in, is this still something that you can say? Certainly, it's been going on for decades, centuries. Probably as long as ships have been sailing. I mean, the bottom of the ocean is dotted with ships, and I don't know what will stop it. I mean, there was the Derbyshire instance, which I write about in The Wave, was a British ship, the largest ever lost at sea, and the biggest ship insured by Lloyd's of London, and it went down in a typhoon off the coast south of Japan. And because there was quite a lot of means, it was a British ship, British crew, the families of the crew banded together and forced there to be 3 inquiries into what really happened to it. And then they ultimately, amazingly, they found the wreckage, so they were able to study it and see what happened. And what happened to that ship sort of points the way towards probably what's happening to a lot of them, and that is they're these long, low, flat things. They have these hatches on the top of them, and the waves, when the waves get big enough, they breach the hatches. The water flows into the ship, and it snaps it, and the Lloyd's of London guy said, like, basically compared to snapping a pencil. And then when that happens, it doesn't take very long for the pieces to sort of plow down to the bottom of the ocean. And in this case, the stern and the bow were more than a mile apart, so that had clearly happened. And I guess the missing link in all this is, well, why aren't the ships built to withstand the waves that they are so obviously enduring? And that's exactly as you said. It's because they didn't realize those waves were out there. Like, well, you've got a 45-foot sea. We do a bunch of equations. We figure out, okay, that there should 64-foot waves should be the biggest wave that we encounter. And they do this statistic for the 100-year wave. But what's becoming very clear is, you know, our statistics are wrong. Every scientist I spoke to, I asked them that question, and every last one of them, and I mean, I guess I'm probably up near 100 that I was talking to, nobody thought it was going to be a calm feature.
What's the biggest wave you've ever seen in person?
Well, it was probably the day at sort of Santos that I write about. There was a wave approaching 70 feet, and that wave knocked me back on my heels pretty good. It did something that none of the other waves I'd ever seen had done, which I describe in the book, sort of with this marching forward as a vertical wall. And it also came sort of out of the blue. It was a bit of what they call in surfing a cleanup wave, because all the surfers got caught on the inside of it. They weren't expecting it. Like, all the other waves were like 40, 50 feet, and then all of a sudden this thing comes along.
How, I mean, was that the most sort of frightened or surprised you were during the research for this book? I can't fathom seeing a 70-foot wave approaching while you're in the water.
Well, I went also down the face of maybe a 40 or 50-foot wave. But, you know, by the end of it, I was that wave did make my eyes widen, that's for sure. And I did, in the epilogue of the book, see some very, very big waves at Jaws. I don't know if they would have been quite that big, but you know, I don't know that I would say scared so much as awed. Like, there's this sense of absolute awe when you see these waves. They're certainly one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, and by far the most powerful thing I've ever seen.
Now, how do you make the leap from those waves to this bay in Alaska that you write about that has experienced 400-foot waves and 1,700-foot waves? I mean, that I can't even begin to try to picture it.
Well, that place, Latoya Bay, is so unusual and so weird. There, of course, that's a different kind of wave. They are that bay, and it almost looks like a sort of a fjord, although I guess technically it's not. It's deep, and it has these very steep mountainsides all around it, and then it has a very active earthquake fault, the Fairweather Fault, right behind it. So it gets shook, and then piles of rock and ice and things like that come